Good morning and welcome to Neocone View. I'm Peter Newman, and joining us this morning is the director of the Tillamook County Library System, Sarah Charlton. Good morning and thanks for joining us as you have in the past.
It's great to be back again. Thank you so much for coming to see me.
For those of our listeners who have not had an opportunity to hear from you before, describe the whole system. How many libraries, locations, what is it that you oversee?
Well, in Tillamook, we're a county library system. There's only about four or five of us in Oregon. We have the main library in Tillamook, and we have the branches in Bay City, Garibaldi, Manzanita, Pacific City, Rockaway. And for the outlying areas, we even have the bookmobile that goes to daycares and senior centers and nursing homes and farms and schools, and we're everywhere with that thing.
Yeah, I imagine, I'm just guessing that for a relatively small county, that's a pretty ambitious system. Is that, that's got a per person, that's you're covering this county probably better than most.
We are. Well, the county's about 1,100 square miles. And we're so lucky because our branches, Garibaldi and Bay City, they are housed in city halls in Bay City and Garibaldi, and the city is a great to let us stay there for no rent. The other three branches, Pacific City, Manzanita, and Rockaway, are owned by different Friends groups. The Friends own and maintain those buildings, and they let us stay there rent-free. That's the only way we can have all our branches, because people have been so kind to us to let us house us basically for free and let us move with staff, books, and computers and set up business. It's amazing.
What if, this may seem like a very basic question, but what is the utility of a library, and what are all of these people going to you, and what services are you providing? What's your core mission?
Well, it's always been books, and I think people tell me that books are going away. People are reading more now than ever. We still have reference books. A lot of them are online. I'm going to talk about those later on today. We're still breaking records. Last year, we had over 400,000 items checked out. That's a lot of books for a library our size. A lot of people come to us for internet. Some people can't afford internet. Some people just come in to use our wireless because they like the speeds we have. Libraries all over the country are tourist destinations because tourists stop to email home to let families know where they're at this point, especially on the Oregon coast, because a lot of people are traveling through on bicycles and things like that. E-books are becoming popular. About 1% of our circulation now is e-books. So that's becoming the next biggest thing. So all in all, we have about 60 or 70 different services, but we combine to basically serve people any way we can. People come in, and now we teach them how to use an e-reader. After Christmas is one of our busiest times, because everyone got a new e-reader, or they got the one that the kids wanted to replace, and they end up with an older one. And we teach people how to use e-readers, and we teach people how to use a computer. Smartphones. We teach people how to use a smartphone. All these things that people need, we're there to help.
When it comes to, we were hopping into e-books sooner than I thought we might, because I want to talk to you about that. But as long as you mentioned it, there are these different formats, and I think a lot of people are a little bit confused. You know, should I get the Nook or a Kindle, or there are other formats as well? It's getting kind of confusing. Do you, as a library, help sort that out for people, or are you kind of format agnostic?
I like that, format agnostic. I like it. I have a Kindle, and then I went to the mini iPad last year. We have several ebook readers, and we let people look at them, see which one they like to go with. Any one of them we actually can teach people on. On my iPad, I do use the Kindle app, so I kind of lean toward the Kindle because the format's nicer. I also use the Adobe e-readers. It's just what your preference is. Everyone's a little different. If you try one you don't like, you can go over and try another one and like it.
So if I want to check out an e-book from your library, which ones should I be interested in? Which format should I be interested in?
You know, once again, it's preference, but I think the Kindle app is the easier one to use at this point.
But you can do others.
Yeah. Yeah. We use Overdrive, which is one of the top five companies in the country now. You can download. They give you a couple of ways of using it. So when you download a book, you can go pub format or Adobe or Kindle. And depending on the reader, some of your readers will not take all the formats. So you have to know what your reader will use before you can download. But when you have options. And I would be the first to say it's not perfect yet. It's still getting better as the years go by, because this is such a major change in our lives, is downloading an ebook. It's just huge. But the company's getting better, and we just upgraded in the past 3 months. Sometimes you had to wait a couple months for a book, because we are sharing across the state, but we added on a Vantage plan that if a Tillamook person gets on after 5 holds, it kicks in another copy. So that's making it better for our patrons. But it's getting better every year. It's not perfect yet by a long run.
Yeah, we should probably remind people that just because it's in the e-format doesn't mean there's an unlimited supply. You have a given ebook, there may be 5 or 6, I guess we should call them virtual copies that are might be available to you.
That's right. And basically, you buy it just like a book. So we buy an ebook. And then that's the copy we have. It doesn't multiply. And when you have that copy checked out, no one else can get to it. So virtual, it's a weird way of thinking it, because it's not really virtual. It's still you're checking out a book and you keep it for 3 weeks and then it disappears off your reader.
Now, to give paper its due, I read fairly recently that there was a study that says people retain information better when they're seeing it in hard copy. Have you followed that?
No, but one thing I'm seeing with the studies too, people that do have e-readers are reading more because they're reading on the e-readers, but they're checking out more books also. So a lot of people use the e-readers on vacation only, and but it's showing that people are reading more. There was a fear that people may not read more having an e-reader, but people are reading more now than ever, which is amazing. I'm just happy as can be.
Well, you should be. That's sort of
it's good for business.
That's what you're all about. Yeah, and the idea that you could go on a vacation or go on a trip and take 20 books with you. Who would have thought?
That's right, because TSA does not like my luggage if I come through with just 20 books. E-readers are much easier to get through security now.
Well, do you think that's going to change the physical layout of libraries in the future? I mean, we have the buildings we have now because they were built around the book. But what's the library of the future going to look like?
It's interesting. Some libraries are changing. We are set up to change. One day, there may be more computer spaces and just open spaces for people to use for different things. Right now, libraries are doing what they call maker spaces, that you make an area, and we have study rooms for this, that people can get together and do crafts or make a project. Or we haven't gotten into a 3D printer yet, but that's some libraries are going into that for people to go in and make something. So that's changing. Libraries are still a very much a place of value for people. When a community has one, that means people think very highly of their community. It's also a place for people to come if they're by themselves and just want to be around people. We're isolated so much these days because you might have a computer at home. Sometimes you just need to get out with people. And there's only so many times you can go to a store before they start looking at you weirdly. Libraries are good for that. Libraries will always have story times because the emphasis now is on early literacy. And we start at age, first day you're born. We have programs for that. You bring your baby in. And you start hearing words and music, and we do a lot of that now. We always have, but now we're being recognized more for doing that. And from birth to death, basically, we are here to serve you. The studies are coming out now. Older people, if they keep reading or something like that, it keeps their brains going on longer. And we have a lot of older people just stop in every morning to read the newspaper. And libraries across the nation are seeing that because we serve every age, which is different from any other organization in the world, I think.
Our guest this morning on Neocon View is Sarah Charlton. She is the director of the Tillamook County Library. Libraries really are communal places, and you just touched on one of the things that you do and do so very well, and for example, the story times. That's a wonderful thing because it is something you really can't replicate in a home. I suppose you can in schools, but to have these community spaces, we're all coming together, we're hearing the same thing, and we're being read to, or we're having a dialogue about a piece of literature.
It's amazing because when the young mothers come in, they meet other young mothers and they find that cute common thing right there. You have a baby, and then we see mothers meeting up with their children, and the same with the the older kids when they come for the actual story time. That's the 3 to 5 year olds. Nothing as crazy as having 20 to 30 kids in one room together bouncing off each other. But the kids are also learning how to behave, how to be in a group setting, because that's really important. And today we're so isolated, that's really important to have your child out with others because they're going to be going on to school. And our goal is to have them ready for school and just be able to sit still, listen to a story, follow a story. That's really part of getting ready to read and getting ready for school. So that's what we do so well. Of course, it's all fun. So the kids don't know they're learning. They just know it's fun. And the teenagers, we're doing a lot more teen programs down here. and the teens, there's everything from reading, of course, to making things, Legos, Halloween. They did pumpkins for Halloween. And, of course, everything has some more of a literary theme to it. But it's just fun for teenagers because the teens, they drop out of reading about 12, 13, and then they don't come back till in their 20s because there's schools, there's all kinds of activities. But we don't want the kids to forget about reading at all if we can help it.
Yeah, speaking of kids, it seems to me that post Harry Potter, all of a sudden, there's just an awful lot of interest on the part of kids in actually reading and following a story.
Harry Potter was the best thing that ever happened to us.
Yeah.
And now we had a Twilight series and all those series because it's a whole stage people love, the horror motif. They love that. And I don't like to get scared myself. I'm a big chicken. But anything to keep the kids reading. You know, and of course, it's up to the parents. If the parents decide their kids are or are not ready for the books, it's up to them. But the kids love it. Anything with them, you know, Hunger Games, anything like that, the kids are really into. And it keeps them reading. I'm so glad authors are into that right now. So it keeps people involved.
I'm wondering if we can sit here and be armchair psychologists or sociologists. But, you know, you're mentioning, you know, it's whether it's horror or magic or something like that. It's interesting to think about what is interesting to a young person and whether they're sort of using this literature to see a certain side of life, to explore a dark side without actually having to be in the dark.
That's probably it. It's always escapism, whatever you read, because I happen to love mysteries and, you know, that's... You know, I just love mysteries, and the funnier they are, the better I like. I don't like the gory stuff. I like the funny ones. So I guess whatever, you know, gives you pleasure for a few hours when you sit down to read or whatever, but the goal is it keeps the mind working.
Well, we're about ready to start a new year. What are some of the programs that are coming up in the coming few months?
Well, the big thing right now is we are doing, technically it's called a needs assessment. And what that means is the library has hired a consultant to come in, take a look at us, survey our public and see what we're doing well, where we should be going, and it's all based on public input. So at the fair, we did a short survey. Some people may remember the three questions we asked at the fair. And then we did open houses in September at every branch. We asked people to come in and tell us what you think. And based on those two things, a long survey was made, and it opened up December 1st, and it's going to go to January 15th. And I will warn people, it's a long survey because we need to find out a lot of stuff from people because we're going to be planning for the next 5 or 6 years. We want people to tell us what we're doing well, what they want us to improve on, and what do they want to see us in the next few years, what to do. So we've asked a lot of questions, and it's been fascinating because the open house particularly, because people came and told us what they liked and didn't like, and then a survey is set now to ask everyone, what do you think of this? What do you think of that? What do you think of our buildings? What do you think of our websites? Why do you come to the library? What do you use us for? It's really quite fascinating to see. We're hoping for about 400 surveys to come back. Because with our population, they said 400 is enough to give a, they call it a segment, to see what where we're at. And then our consultant will present to the library board. She's coming in December to report, and then in January she'll report to the county commissioners. And then we will have our game plan for the next 5 or 6 years. So we've always done surveys, but this is really something special to us because it's bringing in somebody who's totally neutral to us to ask, what do you think?
Will you be talking to people who don't use the library?
We are. The consultant actually has a list, and she's been calling people who support us, who don't use us, and who are neutral. So it's going to be fascinating to see. Some people have done the survey, and they said, we don't use you, but we feel that the library is a community value that we like, and we think it's very important. Some people use us and say, well, we don't like the computer stuff. We just check out books. We have people that have told us, we just use the library for the computers, but that's what we come for. It's fascinating to see how many, what people use this for. There's no one thing. It's just, it's amazing. So Go to our website, if you would please do a survey for us. And we're tillabook.org. And it's right there on the front page of the website. And go right into it. We have it in English and in Spanish because we want to hear from everybody that uses us. And just tell us. And I will let people know. It's a long survey. But it would take probably about 5 minutes. And it would help us plan for the next 5 or 6 years. So please take 5 minutes and help us, because it's fascinating to see. You can tell what people have asked us and have told us just by looking at the survey questions.
The issue of personal privacy and what might be necessary, I suppose, or national security occasionally comes up when it comes to libraries. Yeah. You know, who is this person who's checking out these books on bombs or something like that? And I don't even know if you have books on bombs. But you get the idea.
Yeah.
Where do you fall down on something like that? I mean, how much should the government know? And since you do report to the Tillamook County government, you are in effect part of the government anyway. But how much access should authorities have to my reading rights?
Libraries are probably the last safe haven. State law provides any item, a book, whatever it is, that has a name on it, is protected by law. Email addresses, phone numbers, patron's name. The only way anyone can get a name attached to a book, they have to walk in here with a subpoena. And the only time that has happened to me, and truthfully I had no problem with it, we had a sex offender that used a computer. And he was at Roseburg, and he came up here, and the state police came in with a subpoena. And I had no problem, because he was after young girls. Other than that, that's the only way someone can get information is with a subpoena. We protect, because people come and say, you know, I can't remember what my wife read. Would you help me? I can't tell you. Now, a patron can go into our website. They can log on to our catalog, and they can keep a running list of what they read, but staff cannot see it. And that's been great for people who, like me, love mysteries and you want to keep track of your books. But we cannot see what is on our side.
Of course, we're now learning that government has all sorts of ways of finding out information about you online without even maybe you as a library knowing about it.
Yeah, they can't find anything out from us, but like you say, they can go every place else and find it. But libraries are probably one of the last safe havens that you have, because we do not give out information. And state law protects us on that one, because whenever a book is attached to a name, your library barcode is protected.
That's good to know. That's very good to know.
Yeah.
Well, what about programs coming up? We're midway through the school year, and besides schools, we're just midway. We're start of a brand new year. What's coming up? What do we have to look forward to at the library itself?
Next year is going to be a fun year. Oregon has a famous person, William Stafford. Stafford was a National Poet Laureate. He taught at Lewis and Clark for 40 years. And he's one of the great Oregonians of our land. Next year would have been his 100th birthday. So all the libraries in the state are celebrating William Stafford next year. It's going to be the year of the poet. And what's going on? Libraries across the state, we're doing displays. We're going to be reading books about William Stafford. His poems were just amazing. He wrote for the common man. And if you don't like poetry, you will probably like William Stafford. He wrote one poem on the Wilson River. And when I read it 3 times, and I actually cried. It's not your sweet, syrupy poem. It's about life. And he wrote about everything in Oregon. So everyone's going to be celebrating William Stafford. We're going to have some special programs about Stafford. We'll bring in author Stafford on him. His son Kim is a poet in his own right. So we hope to have Kim Stafford in next year. Writers groups. Brian Dole is another famous writer in Oregon. We're going to have Brian in. There's a list of, I think it's 35 things that William Stafford loved. Everything from a picnic in your park to carrot cake. So whenever we have some, we'll probably have carrot cake in celebration of William Stafford next year. Because this is a big deal. When I first came here, I had heard of him. I didn't know anything about him. But he really is, they call it a quintessential Oregonian, because he loved everything about Oregon. And we'll be listing out programs next year. We're at the point we're finalizing them now. So I don't have the dates yet. It's in February. There was a movie on William Stafford done in the late 70s. Because William Stafford was conscientious objector in World War II, so he went into medical instead of going to war. They did a movie on him, and we're going to be showing the movie, and also the gentleman who wrote and directed the movie will be coming up here. A bunch of us had opportunity to grab this person, to have him come up and talk to us around the state. So this is going to be a huge deal. All that's going to be announced in January. But it's an exciting year for us because it's just going to be the year of the poet. And all these things will be going on throughout the year. And this is every library in the state, not just us. So it's going to be a huge deal. The Bin Library kicks it off in January and also Lake Oswego. So even if you don't live around Tillamook, you can look at your local libraries and see who's doing a William Stafford celebration. Just go enjoy. It's going to be a fun thing. There's going to be things for every age group. So even children will be able to read a William Stafford children's book next year.
I'm seeing a lot of interest in poetry. When I suppose by a lot, meaning maybe, what, going from 2.5% to 5% of the population, perhaps. Yeah. But I think you pointed out in Stafford's case is very use of common language and just direct speak. That seems to be what poetry seems to be evolving toward. It's not trying for
not the highfalutin stuff. It's
excessive metaphor and just going for straight talk.
Exactly. And that's what when I started being Stafford in the past year, that's what really hit me was he just spoke the language. And the Wilson River one is just, I get teary just talking about, because about driving on the Wilson and seeing this thing in the road, you go over and you see it's a deer that had been hit, and you can tell, you know, it's about to have a baby deer. What do you do? And I would end that right there, and people can go read the poem, because it's a tearjerker. But it's just amazing. He wrote all over the state, because wherever he went, he had a little poem, and he just added. One book coming out is the, we call it the Best 100 Hits of William Stafford. It's the best 100 poems, most popular poems. And then books about his life, because he was such a huge, now he apparently did not think of himself as anything special, but those that took his classes at Lewis and Clark or just knew him knew he was something special, just an Oregonian that just knew Oregon and wrote about it. That's what made him so special. Plus, one interesting tidbit, he was the first National Poet Laureate. Now you hear about a poet laureate every couple of years. He was the first one in this country, and that's really cool.
Didn't know that.
Yeah, just one of those little tidbits. But that's going to be a big focus next year. Of course, we'll be having this summer reading for kids and summer reading for teens and summer reading for adults. And that's all getting planned out right now. That's always a fun time. We average 1,000 kids in our summer reading and 1,000 adults in our summer reading now. It's a huge event. And people get to read all summer. We go for 2 months. And we have programs, and we just have fun that whole 2 months of summer. And the teens, they have their own special program because they're doing everything from rock the band, to making things, to Legoing, you name it. And the teens are having a good time. So it's always fun around here in the summer.
How about you? How did you get into the library biz? Would you remember how you first got interested in books?
I do. I went to, my mother was an English professor. I have to say that.
So that's a good start right there.
That's DNA right there.
Yeah.
But I was in high school in Alexandria, Virginia. And I volunteered at the library because I was a shy kid. No one believes that, but I was really shy. And our school librarian, she was Miss Cherry Blossom on weekends. She was a librarian. And that so impressed me because librarians are known to be dowdy. But here was this young woman that was just amazing to me. So in college, I worked my way through libraries. I knew I wanted to be a librarian. I was also a music major. But I wasn't good enough to go professional music. I was too bashful, was my main problem. And I love libraries. So I started just working in libraries and then went on to get my master's and just worked my way up the field. So it's a wonderful place to be, I will say.
A lot of people aren't aware that there's a whole academic discipline of library science.
Yeah, you have to have a master's. And then these days, most of them, you have to have a second master's. And then all you work your way up. So it's a whole field. Until 50 years ago, you just had to be, truthfully, the spinster sister of the family, and you got the library job. All that's over. The qualification you have to have now is quite intensive, and you have to keep learning. You just don't get a job and stay put, because if you don't learn, you're going to die in the field. So it's pretty intensive.
What are some of the names of courses? What do people learn when they pursue a degree?
Always change. Now you still have to take the cataloging, but now it's more tuned to the computers and websites and teaching people with computers. Of course, if you're a children's librarian, you specialize in children's literature and how to get the children ready to read. You can take courses in older adults, how to keep older adults reading. Information sciences is so technical now. And of course, when I was taking, you still do, classes in how to get a system, because we're all technical here. Is what we do. And of course, our computer system is so complicated. It's probably one of the most complicated systems that one can have, because it runs everything we do.
Well, going back to the old Dewey Decimal System, I mean, that's a...
we still love Dewey.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, it's a highly organized form of data collection. I mean, it was really it was data analysis and collection before its time.
And John Dewey, who invented it back in 1890, he was amazing. It's still going well. There's a separate system for college. That's the Library of Congress system, and that's even more complicated. But Dewey is still very pronounced in the public library field, and you don't have to feel like you know the Dewey system. That's what we're here to help you. It just helps us classify things so we can find it for you.
Does the system, has it by nature changed? Because we add so many different disciplines and sub-disciplines, and then there's interdisciplinary science or literature. It seems to me you keep fragmenting it. The decimal point keeps moving further and further
along. It keeps moving there. When computers came in years ago, there's a huge extra number in there that they added. And, you still see an extra number being added to subdivide all this stuff. It's truly amazing.
But the basic structure still works.
Still works. It's absolutely amazing. And every decade or so, they add another number in there to make it whatever. But it still works. And considering, you know, what, 130 years now, it still works. It's really amazing. Now, of course, everything is automated. Because our computer system we have, and most people don't realize this, you see our online catalog, and that's normal. But we also have a circulation program that we check things in and out. We have cataloging. It's all tied in together. So it's pretty complicated.
But is there somebody somewhere that is saying this book deserves this number and this book deserves that number? Is there a central Dewey authority?
Library of Congress. They do all that. Our librarians here who catalogs, they you're trained to know where that book basically belongs. But Library of Congress, they do most of it, because we can jump in there and say, what did they catalog this as? And you can see what they did, and then you kind of say, okay, that makes sense. Or local history. We catalog our own local history here. So you can kind of tell where it belongs. So, yeah, it's quite complicated. It's just like a accountant that knows numbers. That's what we do, if we know all this bits and pieces of information.
And I imagine were it not for the computer, the library would have to be acres and acres, because you couldn't get all that information in one building without a computer.
I was there before computers. I'm so glad computers are part of our lives, except when they break down.
Well, there's that.
You know, you can hear the air turn blue when something breaks, and that happens from time to time, but it's just part of life now. We're all automated. It makes life better.
You know, I hope you never have to reboot the library.
We do once in a while. It's coming tomorrow, because they're redoing an upgrade. So what can I say?
Well, I can say it's been a great pleasure once again to talk to Sarah Charlton, the director of the Tillamook County Library. Have a great year. It sounds like it's a busy one coming up.
Thank you so much for coming to see me. I'll see you next year.
It's a deal. And I will see all of you next year, next month, on Neocon View.